Well, I guess we can just get started and have an informal conversation, yeah. So. I think you guys, we all know each other, Jeff, myself, Heather, Seth.
Hi,
hello.
Yeah. Everybody have a good day.
Yeah, it's nice. It's, you know, it's funny, we send the adjustment with, not, this isn't about Christmas and New Year's, but with the election and the transition period, it was like trying to figure out, reading the tea leaves of what was going to happen. It's still trying to read the tea leaves.
I know.
And it seems like infrastructure, you know, while at one point it was getting heavy billing, it's now getting pushed further and further back because you got the deficit hawks who don't want to do any deficit spending, and you've got the tax hawks who aren't going to let you raise any income or raise any tax for the fund. And, you know, then there was, I don't know if you guys saw, there was that transition team, Trump top 50 projects, which included dams and CSO in Cleveland and Fred Spence Bridge, which is desperately needed, but they all require, you know, like 50% private investment. And
yeah, so that's the clue.
Yeah, and so the other thing that I thought was interesting was that you've got, there's a rural Republican from, I want to say, one of the Dakotas that was making a plea today to pick up some short-term revenue through, like, a customs service tax, but they don't want to lose the federal streams because the only way you're going to make money on transportation investment is through it's got to be high congested toll areas, and most of the rural part of the country, you know, you're never going to, I mean, it can take 1,000 years to get your money back.
In the east, it's a little different.
Yeah, so.
Sheer volume.
It's sort of interesting just to read everybody's perspective, but then, you know, there was an interview with Mitch McConnell who basically said, I don't think we're doing infrastructure. Like, we're going to focus on repeal and replace, tax reform, and, you know, we're not adding money to the deficit, so, you know.
Right. Yeah. We're not going to add money to the deficit.
And then as recently as last night, the Republicans start saying, well, we're not going to replace Obamacare, we're going to repair Obamacare, because they can't figure out how to repair it. Really, I mean, and so it's just like they keep switching tax and the infrastructure just keeps, you know, kind of falling.
That's why everybody grows up learning the shell game and how to avoid it.
Well, and that's the reality too, is that the fund is, we're solvent through 2021, so, or 2020. Right. So we've got a bill. So it's not like we're doing 3-month continuing resolution. I thought we were.
But somewhere they said they were going to look at increasing the gas tax, federal gas tax. But that's just
it seems like every time I see that, there's staunch opposition from at least some.
What are you worried about? Mexico's going to pay for it all.
Yeah. Let's not go into that.
All right.
So anyway, so I wasn't at the last meeting.
All right, so meeting minutes here.
But you see what we've got, which is more of, you know, a meeting summary, just for an update. Like, the draft regional public transportation or transit plan was approved in December, right, Jeff, by our committees.
Yeah.
The congestion management process was approved in January. And with connecting communities, we're still trying to get started with signing contracts and MOUs with our partner communities and their consultants, selecting consultants. So that's that. The two things we wanted to discuss today were, the bigger one is we've started putting together our recommendations for the draft long-range transportation plan, which is due in May. So our staff put together, based on our, based on talking to ODOT, the needs that we identified through our CMP, through our transit plan, through our freight plan, identified sort of the main highway projects, bike projects, pedestrian projects, and transit projects that we think are pretty critical to the region and what we think we should be spending. So the way the table sort of set up is projects that really have, that are more in a discussion that they want to get built, and then the projects that actually have funding in them already, but they're still out there a ways. So on the highway side, the two projects that are the most, that ODOT's looking to do are widening I-77 from Gent to the Cuyahoga County line, and then widening I-77 from Arlington up to 277. The 277 one is a, that is part of that whole Beltway study. One of the things they think is that by adding capacity south of the Beltway, it will help cars getting off of 277 and 77 and 76 to better increase the flow to get them kind of out of the Beltway. And that's just, obviously, that's like one part of the pipe. It's not going to fix everything, but they're trying to piece it off in stages, so they'll build that first, and then they're going to move over to the Kenmore side and try to do something there. And then the Gent area, that's now kind of become a bottleneck just because it's being widened from Cuyahoga down. You know, frankly, I'm not sure if it's something that wouldn't be number one on my priority list, but it is congested, and it does rank on our congestion management process, so it's not a bad project. But we're anticipating that to cost, I think, around, I want to say $60 million, 60 or $70 million. So it is an expensive project. The other projects are ones that I think have already been, you know, had press releases on. The two south ramps at the Central Interchange, that's a 2021 project to reconstruct those ramps. They're continually looking at the study to kind of find more projects. Then the bridge project, I'm sure you guys know, you know, they're going to replace Route 8 bridge. Also kind of add auxiliary lanes on both sides. So, and then Norton-Barberton, the reconfiguring of the interchange there is another issue that we're going to have. So those are kind of the things that we're going to do on the highway side. And then you get onto the roadway side of the arterials and intersections, and this list is basically from most of the projects that we've identified to either be congestion issues, safety issues, preservation issues, or others. So this list, like, we shared it with our committees last week. We're already getting some feedback from communities about which ones they like, which ones they don't, which ones they're interested in. So we'll have the benefit, I think, of getting more input from our communities as well. The other projects, like, again, currently funded are projects that already have funds in them. And then you see the, then we have pedestrian recommendations, which include sidewalk recommendations. And then the last page is the bike recommendations. So right now we've got about 29 trails. That, Heather, correct me if I'm wrong, but those all pretty much came from the bike plan list, correct?
Yes.
So it basically mimics the bike plan and what came out of that. So we're looking if we're going to have to cut projects out of this, just because it is a long list and we are required by federal law to stay under the fiscal constraint threshold. So for the amount of money that we forecast, we have to stay under that. But we're hoping to try to get them all in. And usually, you know, what we start to ask communities are, what projects do you think you're going to do in the next, you know, 5 to 7 years versus the pie in the, like, the ones that are probably longer term. And if we do have fiscal issues, we try to, you know, cut out the ones that have more of the long term, because we can update the plan in 4 years.
What item 15 of the arterials, mm-hmm. they wrote a 40 trail, operational improvements, enhanced transit safety. They just did that for the 40 cross.
They did, and I believe that's on there because it started to pop up with some issues.
Accidents?
Yeah, and I think it was some crash issues, and I think it was also like some intersection congestion issues. So
they had that funny little weave going south.
Did that on-street parking. So
yeah,
that intersection.
And I think we put it on there too, even because it was like we kind of had a half data on it, and we want to see if it's a trend, and we think there's probably going to be some need in the future
to do that, but or to look at some kind of opportunity to maybe improve that.
Yeah, that was a big discussion when they were talking about that, about how they're going to park along Portage Trail, going up to that intersection, and go from two lanes to one lane. One lane is going to be curb parking while it's going through.
Yeah, so that's sort of an interesting project.
Item 35, I think that word is circle, not circle.
Correct.
You know what, Joe? Why don't you just go home?
I told you how I read these things.
We'll get that fixed.
Yeah, I know. We'll fix it.
One of the things we're doing now with these projects is putting costs to them. The other thing we have to do is forecast them in year of expenditure dollar. So that means that then we have an inflation rate that we have to...
Number two, Akron, Evans, Evans, Great Shepherd. That was brought up here years ago.
Oh, yeah. They
had
an earmark.
Was that a half railroad? No, it was all our funding. The railroad didn't have anything to do with it.
It was federal funding. It wasn't even ours. Oh. They got an earmark for that grade separation, and they've done the design work. It's shovel-ready, but now they can't find the money to actually build the project.
Okay.
And quite frankly, I'm not sure if our money is going to be the place that they can get it, because it's a very expensive crossing. But I think there's also some concerns that if they don't do the project, they might be on the hook to pay back some of the money that they used.
If they've already done the loop bringing and right away, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about taking out a house there, too.
Traffic counts.
No, it's a low-traveled road.
Yeah, but half the time I wouldn't go there because of the train. If I knew there was a bridge there, I'd probably take them all off because I wouldn't get stopped by a train. Like Cairo Falls, you got a choice between heading for a 40 trail or broad. Head door broad, good chance you'll be stopped. Sit there, so.
Well, that's kind of like, too, the Hines Hill grade separation, which actually, I'm not showing that in there. That's one we should probably add. Because that's one, they're actually asking us to try to count to see, or see if there's a way we can observe. Because supposedly, I think you guys have probably heard that the trains stop, they get backed up, and then they block Hines Hill. When Hudson gets emergency calls for certain developments, they actually send out three ambulances, depending on where they're going. And what they're trying to get a handle on is how often is this stuff happening? Like, is it, you know, how often are they really backing up? And, you know, what's the best recourse? And so we're actually going to start doing some monitoring in that project, hopefully with some video we can kind of get a sense
of how many times
a day are those trains actually blocking traffic to a standstill. And supposedly they think it's happening three times a day at, I want to say it's like 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 6 p.m. And the others, like, they think it's happening more frequently then, but... they don't really know.
What backs it up?
The yard. There's a yard that's further north, and I guess it's the amount of
traffic going
in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess train traffic going in has to wait to get into the yard, and it backs up. And I've actually encountered it a couple times, but it's been a long time. I don't use that road very often. But it is one of those things, you hit it, you turn around, you go up, I think it's, was it Walters that you have to hit?
You either got to
go back all the way up to Mass. Yeah, so it's not a
good
situation. And you know, you guys.
Well, now 82. I used to go to Macedonia.
Oh, yeah.
But now 82's got that bridge over the top, so that's nice. You can get right over the tracks.
Yeah, and it's widened. There's still so much traffic up there on 82.
And Highland Road has the bridge now, too.
Yeah, Highland's got the bridge. So what we're doing now when we're reaching out to communities is kind of trying to make sure we have everything on the list. I think on the bike stuff, we got a lot of good feedback from the bike plan, so I don't think we're missing a ton. I mean, if we are, if you see anything, let us know, or projects that you think we should consider. The one thing that we didn't do this year that we did in the last plan was, last plan we actually recommended bike lane projects, and it just, the opportunity for bike lanes is so expansive. I think there's so many, you know, I think we're going to go more the route of saying, when you do a project, consider putting in bike lanes instead of trying to say, you know, this one here and that one there. And
I wish we'd use words other than consider, like sort of like you will.
Yeah. Well, if the policy committee could agree on that wording, it would be in there. I think the problem is that they won't. But that being said, I don't see the benefit of like specifically calling out specific streets for bike lanes. It seems like it's more on a case-by-case basis with communities. And, you know, we have some communities like Hudson that are very amiable to putting them in whenever they get the chance, and we have other communities who are, you know, why the heck would we do that? So, although they do seem to be getting, I mean, we've definitely, our bike lane mileage has gone up considerably, I mean, in the last 5 to 7 years, I think. But that's really that. I don't know if you guys have any comments or thoughts or questions on it.
I know Route 8 belongs to the state. I talked to Demosity and Tucker Falls. Why can't you have two lanes exiting south to Howe Road? So two lanes could turn and go up Howe Road and Chapel Hill.
He said they didn't have room
to make a curve on there.
That's in our plan, the Howe Road interchange.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's one of those ones that it's like, no, you know, ODOT is looking at right now about doing a modification where they would extend the, extend it so that cars can get out of the flow of traffic. Because you know when it's bad. I think, but I don't think the room between the highway and the railroad track is so tight where they put that energy.
That's on the east side. On the west side there, you got the shooting almost up to the edge of the gorge.
Yeah.
You try to widen it down on that side for the southbound traffic. So.
Yeah. So that's sort of that's a project that, again, we would really like to see. It's just finding leadership on it. And it's one of those things for, like, Cuyahoga Falls, you know, are they going to take the lead? You know, they've got other... that really is a regional project that almost no one feels like they're responsible for in a way, you know, because it's sort of, it's the ramp that's around there, the state's not as, you know, worried about it.
That'd be interesting for a vehicle count, because now Sears is gone from Chapel Hill, Pop gone, Macy's is gone, stores are empty up there. That would used to be, the mall used to be the big draw, brought traffic off of Route 8. Will we see a decline in traffic going up Howe Road now? The number exiting versus the number...
With all the development that's happened between the mall and Route 8 since then...
Oh, yeah, you got like a lot of other stores in there.
The draw is more west of the mall than the mall now.
Yeah.
So it might go down a little bit, but it's not going to be as drastic of a drop as it would have been 10 years ago.
And then I think even if it did drop, it would be hard to know if that was just because ADT is going down in the area, you know, the amount of traffic, or if it was really because of the mall.
All right.
The town is growing now, too.
Yeah, the town is growing.
Development to the east.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting location. It's a tough... And then, you know, then you've got the issue where Akron's on one side and Falls is on the other. Akron owns the Chapel, or doesn't own the Chapel Hill Mall, but Akron's, the property is in Akron on the Chapel Hill Mall side.
So. I had one dealer tell me, like a Giant Eagle up there, he said, if you're in Giant Eagle, we have a problem, call the Akron police. If you got a problem in the parking lot, we call Chapel Hill police. That's the blind one right down the front of the sidewalk.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. But yeah, so that's about it for that item. The plan is we're actually going to have a bunch of public meetings in March, or at least two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a public meeting regarding the plan recommendations. That's scheduled for March 30th, right? Thursday, March 30th at 6:30. And then we're also, it's that time every 4 years where we're certified by the federal government. And that public meeting is March 14th 6:30 here as well.
No, I came to the last
one. Yeah, I think you were at the last one. So
did you read them to come this time again? Did they want to see citizens in here?
I think they are, and I think they just, it's definitely part of the requirement of the whole certification.
March 14th?
Yeah.
What time?
6:30.
Here.
But they're also really kind of cagey. They're not cagey, but you come in and they want you to sort of comment, but they won't respond to you necessarily.
No, no.
You know, they, it's kind of like one of those, well, thank you for your comment.
They don't want to make sure you didn't hire somebody off the street to come in.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, so they'll take, they almost like the written comments better.
Yeah.
But any other questions on that?
Curious thing.
Yeah.
You do these every 4 years.
Yeah.
Do you ever go back and look and see how what you set 4 years ago is affecting what you're doing?
We do, but we don't do like a, we don't really do like an analysis of it. Because, you know, the first thing we start at is, okay, well, let's see which ones were on the plan last time and how many of them should come over the next one versus how many are in funding. I mean, my guess is that the percent would, it would be, you know, 10% of the projects that we have on the list get funded, maybe. And even that, the projects that we list, we also kind of say, you know, operational improvement projects and safety projects are consistent with the plan. So sometimes we actually fund projects that weren't necessarily called out on the plan, but are projects in the region that, you know, so you don't want to get in the habit of having to list every single project that you think could happen, but just becomes too challenging. So, but I would say usually the projects on the list, we usually peel off a couple of them, you know, and, but it's not a high percentage by any means.
We do it every 4 years, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. So you really get two rounds of funding to build parts of the plan. So it is kind of how it works. So sometimes too, the projects that are funded, like that we show in here, we show the list of unfunded and funded. So the projects that were funded, sometimes, you know, they were funded in the last two rounds, but sometimes they've taken so long to develop, they were actually funded two plans ago, and they're just now coming through the process.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is
funded. The money actually is designated, or is it just because in the plan?
It's designated. It's basically been
set aside.
Yeah, set aside, so to speak. But it's
encumbered.
Yeah, but the fine line is we still want to list them because they haven't been built yet.
Yeah.
So we want to show that they're there, but you know, and there's a weird gap, especially like with the new TIP, which is the next item. The TIP ends in 2021, but some projects we've already funded are scheduled to sell in 2022. So we can't just say, like, oh, all the projects in the TIP are in the plan. We've got to make sure we capture those that might not still be in the TIP. You know, it's just, it's kind of like federal, I don't want to say mumbo-jumbo, but, you know, trying to make all the tables work together and make sense. So.
So you get, you don't have it on, but you get, the other chart shows you how much money you have to put into these arterial intersections.
Yeah, we made this, we do have cost estimates on most of these.
Yeah.
I want to say we're at about, for the listed projects, close to like $200 million.
Is that all?
Well, and then that doesn't include our preservation estimates, which are $4.5 billion. So that's the other challenge, is that most of it we show going into preservation, and then it's like we have extra money left over to say, what could we do operationally to improve the system? The plan also will include, you know, we do have sort of like policy recommendations and policy sections, and so I did just get through writing the technology section of the plan, which there was a study done like a year ago that was looking at MPO plans and how many of them had even discussed like autonomous vehicles and all that. And the percentage was like 10% of plans had. So when I read that, I was like, we're going to have a technology section. But it's really interesting when you start reading about that kind of stuff and then thinking about it from our perspective, like, well, what do you do as a federal agency when they say, oh, we need to get ready for autonomous vehicles. Like, well, what does that really mean, get ready? You know, we fund infrastructure. I mean, we're not going to start funding roadways with, you know, 8-foot wide lanes because we think autonomous vehicles are coming. You know, we're not going to ignore a safety problem now because it might. It's funny that I think one of the things as I was writing and doing some research is sort of there's like this expectation that the federal government or the government general has to do something, you know, to get in front of this, but it's hard to identify exactly.
Right. If you have an autonomous vehicle, the software program in there is going to say the roadway that you're going to, the lane is going to be 8 or 10 feet wide,
or about 12 feet,
or either.
Yeah.
Right. And there will always be these white lines, yellow lines, dashed white lines, yellow center lines, so the optical sensor can pick up what a human driver would see. I mean, that's meaning getting ready. You've got to repaint the roads for these autonomous vehicles.
Right.
And I've seen Garmin direct me some wrong places because they didn't realize that the street had been made one way, and you can't turn left when you leave that one way. You can only turn right, and yet it directs you down there to turn left on.
Right. That's Garmin's fault, though.
Yeah, I'm just...
Or it's the operator's fault for not updating their maps.
But the other thing, too, that's interesting about autonomous vehicles is that there's also the whole idea of connected vehicles. And the sensors might not necessarily be caring about where the paint is versus where the other vehicles are around. Mm-hmm. And so... I mean, and that's really the argument for saying how much more, you know, if you can have two cars driving back in front with 6 inches of space in between them at 70 miles an hour.
Go on, Heather.
Yeah, which would be, you know, I mean.
We do it in Indianapolis all the time.
Right? But, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you really, all of a sudden, your capacity project isn't needed anymore because you're taking advantage of all that extra space.
True, the newer car, whether it's an autonomous vehicle or you've got the. What are we going to call autopilot mode?
They got the continuous cruise control now.
A lot of those things are already in place on the newer vehicles.
Right.
And you don't have to change the roads for it.
Right. Yeah, and the society, the International Society of Engineers or of Automotive Engineers put out like a scale list of sort of level 1 through 6 on autonomous vehicles, and it was how integrated communities and are to autonomous vehicles, and you kind of look where we are right now, like we've got a long way to go to get like fully autonomous, but kind of looking at those, you know, we really are, like Heather said, we're on that level too, where it's like you still have the human driver, but now you've got these additional features like blind spot monitoring, optical cameras, lane assist, lane watch, all that.
Well, the ads where you don't rear end the car in front of
the emergency braking, we're already seeing that kind of, you know.
You know, a lady could have used that at Portage and 3rd in Chicago Falls because somebody just about T-boned her at the intersection.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, whatever he was doing, he went right into her.
Sounds like he could have used it.
Pardon?
Sounds like he could have used it.
He could have used that. Yeah. But now, again, if the car is smart enough to know it's a red light,
right,
if it makes a signal...
Right,
valid for 50 feet or something at the light, you don't want to interfere with the next block, that it would stop the car no matter what you're trying to do to let traffic through.
And then, you know, you look at things like transit and bike and ped, and how do autonomous vehicles interact with those modes? Because there's some concerns about, you know, will an autonomous vehicle deal with a car? Or I guess the biggest issue with autonomous vehicles is everything's algorithms. And you can't, you know, doing the unexpected is the one thing that the vehicle might not react to. And I think the one Google accident that there was in the vehicle had to do with a bus pull off that the bus, I can't remember what the story was exactly, but the bus pulled off quicker, pulled back onto the road quicker, or pulled off too slow, and that was the first accident of the Google vehicle was something.
Well,
like
one
that.
Of the theories is that every car will have a transmitter, just like an aircraft.
Yeah.
And it says, here I am, here's my number. It's got the input GPS, I'm traveling this direction at this speed, and all the rest of the vehicles understand that.
Right.
So.
And the conspiracy theorists won't have a field day.
Yeah. in theory, you don't need traffic lights anymore because this one will slow down, this one will go up, and just keep traffic moving.
Yeah.
But buses, you know.
Yeah. And so, like, what we're trying to do is we're having that narrative and kind of just and trying to even anticipate what that could look like, you know, and what some of those things are. But I just think after doing a little bit more, I mean, obviously you've read about them, but and then even reading about, like, the state of Ohio, you know, they released their ODOT released their budget, and they're putting $15 million in this Route 33 smart corridor between Marysville and Columbus, and, you know, all these sensors, and it's going to tell us all this about, you know, and there's a part of me that's like, all right.
You know. Well, you know, if you anticipate, as they tell you to get prepared for it, go back to the old days when you had a bicycle and you had a little generator on your tire, on the side of your tire, and that lit your little headlight up front, this was years ago. And you could do this similar thing or have a battery in there to boost it, but you could put a little antenna on your bike. That's all it says is bike. Mm-hmm. Now, the smarter things around it, cars and buses, would detect that signal and know there's a bike out there somewhere. Maybe, I don't know about direction, but it's just a bike in the area. You know, you come up to an intersection, there's a bike
right
somewhere. You're not going to have all the same data of capability you have on board of a car or a truck or bus.
And just wait until you start opening up the freight can of worms with truck drivers and...
Oh, the truck platooning that they're already working on.
Yeah. Because, you know, Ohio also, Otto, the autonomous truck, has been driving on the
turnpike. Yeah, I've been reading that. That came out a couple of years ago. I saw an autonomous truck driver. They had
and Ohio there. Seems to be really geeked up on it. And
well,
so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But, I mean, in some ways it makes sense. If you could be a truck driver, drive here, because I think, what is it, 11 hours now, or is it 10 and a half?
Yeah, 10 and a half, I think.
It's right 10 now. And a half. So you can drive 10 and a half, you can sleep, the vehicle can still... You know, still drive for another 8 hours while you're asleep, and then you can man again. But the long term vision of that is, what do you need to man?
You don't need a man. Right. You don't need a driver.
Anymore. Yeah.
Right.
So,
for straight haul, it'd be great. You could go from a Cleveland terminal to Chicago terminal, the truck would know exactly where it's supposed to turn.
Yeah.
And do whatever.
Yeah.
And so, it backs in, drops a load, somebody directs it over another one. You check it to make sure it's fueled, everything's
right.
good, and light's working. Heads on back, and you
right.
can shuttle that way continuously.
You might need a guy on the truck for a short haul that, you know, is helping get deliveries off.
Oh, yeah.
But he's
yeah.
really just riding in the back with this yeah. stuff. So. But anyway, so those are some of the issues that we're trying to tackle. You know, we obviously do an analysis of demographics, population, employment, all that kind of stuff. So it's starting to come together, so we're pretty pleased with it. But
just have one question
yeah.
for you. What's it going to cost to replace all of the stoplights in the world
to
be able to transmit a signal, say it's turned red.
Yeah.
It's going to take forever.
So yeah, slowly out there, put an antenna up, and it go from red to green to directional, too.
How long does it take you to get to be able to replace that?
The signal itself costs, $80,000 to $150,000, depending on technology. And that's without doing all the other stuff to get it hanging. You know,
mm-hmm.
But that's actually another issue that some of our members have brought up is just that signals, you know, we talk about preserving the existing system, signals actually are becoming a bigger part of that because there's signals that are 50 years old. There are signals that aren't warranted anymore in Akron,
mm-hmm.
but they don't necessarily want to take them out because they still, you know, that's a whole other PR type nightmare that, you know, hey, we're going to kind of maintain this thing, but you know, the feds aren't going to let us put a new one up because it's not warranted, so you got to keep the old one, and you know because you know somebody that lives on that street is, you know, an important
that's why I think that in the scale of 1 to 6 on the driving the autonomous cars, you're not going to get past 3. You're not my lifetime,
right.
Certainly not your.
I think we're going to sit at 2 for a long time with that technology being honed and getting stronger and stronger and. I don't feel like it's going to be one of those things where one day we all like get out of bed and it's like, holy, you know.
It's like LED lights. I mean, they were very expensive.
Right.
Now they're dropping in price. I heard one large building relamped everything with LED 4-foot bulbs. And of course, their electricity
went yeah.
like zip.
Oh, it's
been for 50 years.
Right.
But now it's been 10, 15 years coming. So I would think if somebody comes up with a magic black box with an antenna on it, that would sit on top of a traffic light.
Yeah.
And they could wire it into the red, yellow, green.
really want to wire.
Also, it could be have a fail safe in it, so that if one of those signals craps out, whatever.
Yeah.
It's, you've got to put out a message that you're hitting a situation, you're in an area where you don't have a safe signal.
Right.
What are you going to do then? You switch to a driver?
Well, the fail safe would be make them all flash red, yellow, green at the same time. Tell you the signal's off.
You've got to send the signal on, whether you got a power on.
Power outage is the same thing.
That's why I don't think
that's where the car transmitter comes in, you know, receiver, like transponder on an aircraft. It'll know where everything else is.
Have we ever got the situation where we could fly airplanes without having a
pilot? Apparently, we do almost.
Well, it's close. Yeah,
it's close.
But I wouldn't want to be in one of the planes without a pilot, that's for sure. The other item that we had was just the first draft list of the TIP. So this is the list of projects that do have funding, are going to be happening over the next 3-4 years. And that list just includes most of AMX-funded projects.
So they're all funded?
Yeah, these are all funded. They all have a year that they're expected to sell, year of when they expect right-of-way to happen, year when they expect engineering to take place.
What's your judgment table was attached to this?
Oh, yeah, I know you were printing this
out. Yeah, right. Well, Carrie gave these to me. I don't think I realized that they were on.
Oh.
But, yeah, and it also includes the transit stuff. And really, when we give this to our local communities, we're just saying, hey, make sure these numbers look like they're your numbers, and this is it. I think for the public, the purpose is to say, hey, these are the federal projects that you're going to expect to see in the next few years. Like I said, some of the biggest projects are, I think the Route 8 bridge is in here for 2021. What else are some of the key projects? Let's see.
$102 million.
Yeah, a lot of resurfacing projects, a couple of trail projects, the Freedom Trail. The other big one that's in here is the Route 8 repair, which is, I think, it was like 50 or 60 million, say, Route 8? 53.
That's total pavement replacement?
Yeah, so that's where the concrete section from the falls up through Hudson, that's going to be a huge project, too, with all the concrete. Yeah, and as any of you who lives in the north knows, that Route 8 is horrible.
It's bad. Yeah. Really bad.
With all the joints have been degraded and all that, it's just bad.
Should they switch it to asphalt, or they're going to redo the whole concrete?
That I'm not sure. I think they have to redo the concrete. Well, I don't. Unless they tear it out, I don't know if they are
reconstruction.
Yeah, because you wouldn't on a highway. You wouldn't put asphalt over concrete on a highway.
No, you could still have to take out right.
Yeah.
Tony DeMasi said on Howell Road, they're talking about ripping out the concrete and putting asphalt.
Yeah. Well, they're dealing with that in Talmadge, too. They don't know what to do with, because they've got the four lanes in Talmadge on the Talmadge side, too. Mm-hmm. And they have that same issue. That road's in bad shape, but it's got low ADT.
I said, well, one of those semis and trash trucks will put tire grooves down the middle and you feel like you're going down a toboggan chute.
So these are kind of the things that we anticipate happening. I think really that's what we wanted to share tonight and kind of to open it up to any kind of general conversation or general concerns or anything else that that Bill might be on your mind since we saw you last.
So for people to get around on mass transit, there's big buses and little buses. And then there's Uber, which is a car. motorcycles or bicycles. Should the public transportation service get into something like an Uberized self-driving smart car as part of their fleet to offer that where people would call in and the little thing would go to their house and take them somewhere? Or would that be trading on the commercial side?
That's kind of interesting. We actually met with Metro RTA this week and that came up. Right now, Uber is basically like a call a cab service.
Right.
So what they're actually looking at right now is contracting with Uber to possibly do either last mile connections. So, you know, you get somebody to the end of the stop and then Metro RTA would subsidize the Uber ride to their house. Or potentially in areas where you couldn't have fixed route service, you could subsidize Uber to do that. That looks like something that they are going to look into potentially pursuing. I think one of the things that they struggle with is that, you know, how to serve the outlying suburban areas that don't...
Yeah, because we have rental bike racks. I mean, that's an idea when you're in a high...
Right.
Car population area, you can make money and maintain the bikes. When you get outside of a published route, you know, you don't have a bike rack.
Yeah. And I think Metro does some trips that just are not financially
They're redoing their routes, supposedly, trying to do
it. Yeah, and they actually are going to walk some of that back, too, because that a lot of what they wanted to do focused on, depended on kind of community hubs, so to speak, and they found it very difficult to identify where they could actually have them. They've had issues with communities not wanting them there or wanting them somewhere else, and they found that some of that stuff they don't think is going to work the way they hoped it would.
Chapel Hill got rid of their big bus line up there, and they moved them across the street on whatever that road is.
Independence.
And they're over there by the south of the movie, or west of the movie theater, I think. Where a restaurant used to be.
Well, you know, that Flight Memorial area in Montrose, that was another area that they've had issues. You know, they do transfers and things like that. And, you know, the cops don't like them out there because it impacts visibility and things like that. So.
Oh, yeah. That's a problem across the whole time.
Would the library have winter hours?
I don't think so.
It's
the
same
hours. Sure, because it's always the same. Yeah.
Did
they used to be open until 8:30?
No, before they changed it to 8, I think they were open until 9.
Oh, 9?
Long time ago.
But that was a few years ago. Right?
And then they started scaling it back. I'll double check.
Yeah. I don't know what made me
think. Don't want to be locked in here with a book, huh?
I was looking at the clock, and part of me was like...
Remember how there's an announcer as well?
Yeah. You remember the 15-minute announcement, get the stuff to the checkout counter and get going, so...
Till
8
p.m.
Yeah.
According to... Yeah.
What was these two Portage hike and bike trail things? Sections that are connecting.
What numbers are those?
The first two on there.
I think they're both in Kent.
They're in Kent.
Yeah, so...
Where are they talking about? Quarter of a mile.
Yeah, so the one segment goes from Cannery Park to 59. I'm trying to think of... That basically takes it from sort of south of downtown up to where the... Basically where the river is and where the... Puffer Belly, that gets it up into that area, and then they're going to try to take it, I think, up along the river on the side where there's already sort of a walking trail. Have you ever been down there?
Yeah, and that's got so many
steps
and there's no way to use
it. Right, yeah, but there's a part that, I can't remember what, and Jim's explained this to me, Jim Bowling at Kent, but then I think that goes, there's some way that they can take that up to... where there's that pedestrian bridge up, they're trying to get it to there.
Right.
So it's, but the last time I heard it was still sort of unclear how that second, like the segment to Tannery Park from to Erie, I think that one's pretty well laid out.
I think they haven't really even found the right, the path that they're going to take for the second one.
Yeah, that one's clear on 2021, too.
Right, right.
Funding.
But the first one, too, and I haven't seen like a feasibility, like a trail study to show exactly where it's going. But I think the idea is definitely to get into the park to, so that they're downtown, yeah, and then hit that second phase of downtown to the Fairchild piece that takes the trail on Duke Kent that way. So where that pedestrian bridge is. But yeah, sorry, I don't have more information on that one. I know the squiggly line shows it right along the river on our map, but
yeah,
like you said, I know north of the bridge there's like a nice flat area where there is like walking trails, but like you said, I don't know how they're ever going to get somebody down there, you know, unless it's like a bike portage type thing, which is a, yeah, that's a, that would be a pretty big.
And right now, the only real way to do it is go off and hit the sidewalk.
Right, right. Yeah.
Portage CR18 vertical concept construction of a diverging diamond interchange. What is that, like a square circle?
I was going to see if there's... So a diverging diamond is...
They have that a standard intersection?
No, that one's got a...
CR18 and
really bad cross.
Does that say it's going to be a divergent diamond?
Yeah,
it's not going to be anymore. They're actually
18 Talmadge Road at Monroe Road.
Jeff, could you make a note of that? Because yeah, that's been, I know that's how it's listed, but
it's
actually, what number
page,
is that?
Like
yeah,
the
98585 is the fifth number.
Yeah. So basically, if you've got what a divergent diamond is, and this is going to be a little bit sloppy, but. Yeah, let's just say this is your highway is coming here, and you've got your exit ramps and everything
right,
are spinning around and emptying people out. They are going to do this in Twinsburg.
Cloverleaf?
Well, that's the divergent diamond part, and I'm not a very good drawer, is what's going to happen is, so typically when it's used is that you've got cars coming down, and the predominant movement is left onto the highway. So, and that causes a lot of accidents, people trying to go this way. So what they try to do is eliminate the conflict point. So your traffic will basically do this, and it'll actually go on the other side.
I've seen that.
Yeah, to do the left and then come back.
Yeah.
And then the other traffic crisscrosses it. And so there's traffic light here. You know, traffic light where the other crisscross is.
Where the ramps are.
Yeah. And what I've been told, there's one in Columbus now, and I don't remember what the location is. But what I've been told is that when, as a driver, you almost don't notice it. I mean, you notice, obviously, you're on the other side, but looking at it from up top, you're like, this is the strangest thing I've ever seen. But when you're actually driving through it, it very much feels like, oh, the road's just curving to the left, and the road's curving back to the right. And what it does is it eliminates that conflict of a left turn.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can think about 480 and 91 in Twinsburg, Dairy Queen's up there, the BP station, the Cleveland Clinic now, that's where they want their, just received $5 million to do a diversion diamond, because the predominant movement when you're going northbound on 91 is to get on the I-480 and make that left turn. So you're going to go, instead you're going to swoop to the left, make an easy left with no conflict, and do that. It's a really interesting concept.
Yeah, I saw on I-77 down in North Carolina.
Yeah.
A couple of bridges were built like that. Mm-hmm.
So how does the crossover work? Is it a bridge? Or
that's where the crossover is controlled by a light.
Okay.
So you know, at some point it's all green and then it's red, I think, and then the red allows the ramps to exit and go there two different ways, and then it turns back to green.
So the light there, well, this would be...
Yeah, that's not exactly...
Over here, right, where the light is.
Right, and then the light would turn, and the cars could do.
Go on Google Earth, look at I-77 north of Charlotte, about 15 miles. You'll see it right there.
I drive that way, and I'm trying to figure out what you're saying.
Next town north of Charlotte, after you leave the loop. That's where the ramp is that I use.
It's a little bit different, but they think that it can really help with the safety issues of the accidents. So. And the ODOT seems really interested in it as a design concept. So we're excited to see one in action.
See what accidents happen that way.
Exactly, yeah. What's the worst that could happen? But it should be an interesting project. But the one in Talmadge, or on the Talmadge Road, Brimfield, they're now looking at potentially moving Mogador Road to, I don't know if you can imagine it right now, when you get off of 76 and then you turn left on Talmadge Road, if you want to go onto Mogador, you turn right and you actually cross over the ramp, the exiting ramp that's exiting if you're going westbound. They're trying to eliminate that conflict because that's the one where you turn, basically if you turn on red, you could be staring at a car coming right down the ramp. It's going to T-bone you. And there's a lot of near misses in there. So.
See, there are quite a few roundabouts in there, too.
Yeah. Twinsburg has roundabouts. Green has roundabouts.
Right up the road.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Tiger Grant's going to include a roundabout. Mill and Main. Cycle track, they think.
I have Star Senator LaRose about that. He said, it's in the driving manuals. I got the latest one. It's not in there. How to drive a roundabout.
Oh, what did he say it was in?
It's in the driving manuals.
Oh,
I got the newest one. It's not in there. And then they still got the same thing. Like if a car on a curb lane is supposed to turn in a curb lane, and a car comes here to do the same turn, turning on the center lane, there's no conflict, but you are supposed to be able to zoom way over in the other lane. It's like they've forgotten what the driving manuals are.
Yeah.
All the standard things are in there. I think they dropped this left turn.
Has anybody ever brought up the intersection of Siemens Road, State Road, and Wyoga Lake Road? It's that little triangle.
Triangle up there north, yeah.
Hey, I don't know if that's shown up on our...
I don't think anybody knows it because it's Stowe, Tioga,
right.
Falls, and Hudson.
Right, yeah.
Sort of a weird area.
Yeah, it is.
Turn
I'll have to look to see if that shows up on our crash report. It wouldn't surprise me if that's... There's some places that they're really awkward and there's lots of near misses, but there's not accident.
If you go up Wyoga Lake, you go to State Road, you turn right there in front of that hotel.
Yeah, but that's not...
And then you go north that way.
I come out of Pinto Lakes, and I've got to do a quick... like that to get on the lake to get down on Caesar to get down around. Hey, everybody does.
Yeah.
There's a lot of traffic. But I think they added all that here misses.
Yeah.
They added all that housing up there, so maybe that who would do the traffic count?
We had a traffic count done recently.
Yeah.
But claimed they I don't know what I guess the falls did it.
Oh, the falls did it.
They claimed that they didn't have really enough traffic to really be a problem. But at certain times we do.
Yeah.
When Walsh was in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
a little schools up there.
Yeah. I'll take a look at that. I'm curious to see if we can pull that out of the new safety study, see if anything popped up there.
Mm-hmm.
But because that is sort of an interesting area.
Well, maybe you can do a good deed and print a little section in a paper or YouTube or Facebook or something. Here's how you're supposed to drive a roundabout. But I'll bet you that a lot of people don't have a clue.
There's a lot of videos out there, though.
Yeah,
I think produced by other people.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could Google it and find more than the heart's intent.
I think Green might have even made a video for their roundabouts.
Really?
Just make sure you don't get a video from the UK.
Yeah. Backwards.
So March 30th here.
And March 14th.
March 14th here.
March 14th is the FHWA meeting.
Right, right.
March 30th is Plan and
Team. Right. Okay. I got that right. All right, well, appreciate your time. Thanks for coming.
What's happening with the yield of the change, switching gears?
Oh, changing gears.
Switching gears website. Well.
Anything happening?
And you should talk. Actually, you can talk about the conference.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so first off, the website, we've been trying to determine, I guess, whether or not we really still need the full website, and we've been considering and planning, and we've been distracted, but our plan is to downsize the website, make it more about the bike plan, the bike user map, keep it at that, and have more of the information on our main website. So that's the plan for now. We haven't done it yet, but that's where that sits. In the meantime, there's potentially going to be an Aurora Bike and Brainstorm this spring, don't you think?
That's what
that was
tell
the
us.
plan. Because
rescheduled
I don't know,
from the
you
fall.
Know, we had it
rescheduled
twice.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so it was postponed until this spring. And then we're also working with Barberton to do a Switching Gears conference. So similar to the one that we had in, I think it was 2014?
And it was...
Or 2015? I think it was 2014. So similar to the one that we had here, Jason Roberts will be the speaker. The date for that Switching Gears conference is July 26th. It will be in Barberton, but we're still working on some of the major details on it. But I think we have the location. I won't share that, I guess, until I'm certain. But so that's the plan. That's what's going on there for now with Viking.
You host the, or who hosts your the Switching Gears website?
We do. Oh, who hosts it?
Do you, 427 designs and develops, and then we maintain the
fee.
Yeah.
So you do your own maintenance on it, or they do the maintenance for it?
It's kind of a partnership, depending on what you
Yeah,
do.
They do graphic and design and operation, and we do, like, content.
Yep, so we've kind of gotten away from it.
Yeah, I noticed. I was trying to, I have sort of an idea about the same kind of thing we're trying to do with Switching Gears, of having an information center for bicycling in this area. And I was looking at ways if I could do it myself. And I thought, well, if Switching Gears is being used, there might be a way to do that.
Yeah, well, we were trying to. We tried to put, I mean, for a while I was putting everyone's events on it. Right. We were trying to put news on it.
I think, didn't we initially try to make it more crowdsourced in the sense that
yeah,
people could submit their events and what. Yeah.
I still get tons of spam from the site because there are a couple forms you can fill out. I get emails all the time.
It's something that we don't want to kill off, but losing as much staff as we have in the last, it's really hard to maintain. And but it's like
I don't think we felt like we were getting much back from the effort put in.
Boy, I agree with you. It wasn't, but I was looking at the fact that. Well, I'm looking at Bike Cleveland, what they're doing out there. And really, this area needs some sort of central place where you can send stuff that gets posted.
Yeah,
and sort of like a month.
Could we get the bike shops to host it, pay for it?
It's not a case of that. It's a case of collecting the information, getting it ready, and putting it on.
Yeah. I mean, I occasionally would get emails like, hey, I'm having this event, but that would happen maybe twice a year that someone had an event they wanted to put on there. The rest of the time, I was going to all of the bikes sites that all of the clubs I could think of and trying to populate our calendar with their events, and it felt like, you know, duplicating.
Yeah, but there isn't any one central place.
Yeah, there's no central receptacle
nothing more
for
than
that.
Say, here's the links to all of the bike clubs or bike area things that are going on.
Right. We have a newsletter at one group, and we kept waiting for the other groups to send in their, now they have to send in their March stuff. For us to put out a newsletter, we publish a newsletter like the second week of February, so it gets into the mail to people or online, and they can see what March is going to have. We just got tired of waiting, so we said, here's our links. You want to see what they're doing, go to them. We're not going to publish everything in the calendar, like so-and-so is having something in Dayton, and so-and-so in Toledo, and so-and-so in Pittsburgh. Here's our sites. Go see what they're doing if you want to drive over there.
Well, and we do have links to the clubs.
Yeah.
Sites
I
on our site. And we can continue that. I believe we can still continue that. But I don't know that we'll be continuing the calendar.
All right. All right.
Did you mention that we've got the new bike user map?
No.
We did an update of it, and we sent it out to Metro Parks, I believe.
See, I didn't know where we stood on it since the last time we went over to...
worth of seven. I haven't seen.
So we've got a draft.
Well,
we're working on a new bike.
Yeah, we have a draft that we're working to get comments on that hasn't been printed yet. It's the short story.
Make sure you got me a copy.
So yeah, we'll right. get you. I mean, but the goal is we'd have a mass. You know, we'd have a pretty wide distribution. Like we left. You know, we kind of stopped printing them because, well. We got to the point where we could either order 5,000 more or start a new one, and it hadn't been long enough that we felt like we should do a new one.
It was 2010 when we finalized the first one.
Yeah, so I mean, so
it's been 7 years.
We're looking forward to rolling that out this spring and summer. And yeah, we can get you a copy too.
Yes.
But yeah, because we're also looking for like sand. You know, we basically put it together using a formula of ADT shoulder width. Things like that. So, I can't remember if we didn't we avoid topography.
Yeah,
that was like a big issue. Is that there was debate about should we show things to be difficult if the topography wasn't.
Oh yeah, like a difficulty level for each
for like hills and and I think we ended up leaving.
We
that
left it off because it was too difficult to integrate into the formula.
Yeah,
it's all relative.
Right, and that's what people would say is that. Yeah, people like it. Some people love the hills, and doesn't, you know, it's, and so this is really more, I think, about kind of what the condition of the road is, not necessarily what the grade is or something. Like
that. Yeah, but the condition changes every year or two.
Well, that's true.
And the surface condition was not a variable that was included.
Yeah, it's more of the shoulders and the traffic level and all that kind of stuff. And you know, really, it's kind of like I think. I mean, I don't want to downplay the information, but it's a really good like PR education, something to get people excited about. I mean, people grab those things like candy, which is good, you know. And it has the rules of the road. It tells you where the bike shops are and all that stuff. And so
yes.
I think it still really plays like it's an important document, even if the road ratings aren't going to be, you know, everybody's going to be happy with them or agree with them. It's more kind of, I think, to show.
It's a guide.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, each user is going to either agree or disagree with each individual segment that they ride.
Right, and, you know, one of the things we realized, too, was that there's not a lot of places that you can get a hard copy map of where the bike drifts are for the county, you know, for, like, a larger area. And so that's another thing that it provides is sort of, like, where are the existing bike trails? And we try to make sure we get that. Perfect, because that it can be function too. Is just a trail map as well. So
and it will fold smaller.
Yes, yeah, a lot more.
So it's not, you know,
biker friendly.
But I don't know if it's going to be water resistant this time.
Learn a Ziploc. You could give them to Scout Council or the Girl Scout Council. I mean, I suppose they do bicycle.
Oh, I mean, and we really don't have a problem with the distribution there. We couldn't. You know,
we can't.
Are you talking about distribution
our hands on?
Yeah, if you sent the Great Trail Council out in Akron, I don't know whatever else what Portage has and Girl Scout Council, whatever that area is. I mean, if they want to go on a bike hike for a weekend, I mean that'd be something you could give them.
Yeah. They'd we'll probably use to the bike clubs to help.
Yeah, bike clubs, bike store, bike shops.
Yeah,
Bike shops have always really liked.
Yeah, Wheel and Wrench from State Road has them.
Excellent.
And all right. Did my reach out for all the different shops to make sure they were still in the right address.
Yeah.
I mean, the Blimp City moved from the last time. It wasn't far, but they moved. But we wanted to make sure we had an address on everything. Right.
I was looking at a home and garden show type stuff to see different ones in the counties here. One over by Youngstown, they gave this location out, mall or center or something. And I looked it up, and it said, it closed 5 years ago. But they're listing it as a 2017 home show. So somebody is just putting a new date on, saying it's going to be there. But like Portage Trail is gone. It's over. Roland Acres is gone.
They forgot to look on Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, gentlemen.